I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The country as a whole is paralyzed, and we wanted to finish this and to have a ceasefire. Hopefully, tonight, by tonight, we will have this ceasefire.
As calls grow for a ceasefire in Lebanon, we'll look at how Israel used U.S. weapons to kill three Lebanese journalists last month in what Human Rights Watch has called an apparent war crime. We'll go to Beirut. Then we speak to the head of Amnesty International USA about the group's call for President Biden to grant clemency to Native American leader Leonard Peltier, who has spent nearly half a century in prison.
Yeah, wouldn't allow me to put up a defense and manufactured evidence, manufactured witnesses, tortured witnesses.
Ready, Warden, a new short documentary about the execution of death row prisoner John Henry Ramirez.
John asked me, would you be my godmother? He is just not that person he was then.
Due process was done. Now we're changing our moral judgment.
What will you gain if I die, if I sink into the grave?
You're going to just forgive and that's it? He should pay for what he did.
I made the most changes I could. I buried myself as much as I could, and that's enough.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military is continuing to bomb southern Lebanon and the capital, Beirut, even as Israel's security cabinet meets to discuss a ceasefire proposal with Hezbollah. On Monday, a massive explosion rocked residential buildings in Beirut's southern suburbs following an Israeli warning on the social media site X for people to evacuate or face death. Similar Israeli attacks killed at least 31 people across Lebanon in just 24 hours. The continuing assault came as Lebanon's foreign minister said he hopes Israeli leaders will agree to a ceasefire later today. Under the deal, the Israeli military would withdraw from southern Lebanon within 60 days, while Lebanon's army would deploy to border areas from which Hezbollah has launched rocket attacks on Israel. In Brussels, the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, called for more pressure on extremist members of the Israeli government who are unwilling to forge a ceasefire.
In Lebanon, there is no excuses for a ceasefire. On the proposal agreement brokered by the U.S. and France, Israel has all security concerns. There is not an excuse for not implementing a ceasefire. Otherwise, Lebanon will fall apart.
Josep Borrell also called on EU member states to honor the International Criminal Court's arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the former defense minister Yoav Gallant for crimes against humanity and war crimes committed in Gaza. Borrell cited widespread support for an ICC arrest warrant against Russian President Vladimir Putin over war crimes committed in Ukraine.
Cannot applaud when the court goes against Putin and remain silent when the court goes against Netanyahu.
That's Josep Borrell speaking in Italy at the G7 summit. Syria's government says Israeli airstrikes on Monday injured at least two people and damaged several bridges in Homs province near the Lebanese border. The Israeli military said it had targeted Iranian weapons smuggling routes through Syria to Hezbollah. In Gaza, health officials report Israeli strikes killed at least 14 Palestinians and wounded 108 others over the latest 24-hour period. One strike hit a family home in northern Gaza's Jabalia. Another tore through a crowd of people gathered near a bakery in Gaza City. The latest killings came as Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, told a conference of Israeli settlers Gaza's population of more than 2.1 million should be drastically reduced. In remarks translated by Haaretz, Smotrich said, quote, "It is possible to create a situation where Gaza's population in 2 years will be less than half its current size." Smotrich has called for Israel to effectively annex the West Bank and Gaza Strip and has called for the establishment of large new Israeli settlements. Here in the United States, Special Counsel Jack Smith has dropped all federal charges against Donald Trump for illegally retaining classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate and for attempting to overthrow the 2020 election. In a six-page motion, Smith wrote, "The Justice Department cannot prosecute a sitting president." He added, quote, "That prohibition is categorical and does not turn on the gravity of the crimes charged, the strength of the government's proof, or the merits of the prosecution, which the government stands for behind," unquote. Smith asked to dismiss the charges without prejudice, leaving the door open to a future prosecution of Trump after he leaves office in January 2029. Smith asked that the classified documents case against Trump's co-defendants, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira, be allowed to continue. A Washington Post investigation last year found Attorney General Merrick Garland allowed more than a year to pass before prosecutors and FBI agents jointly embarked on a formal probe of Trump's efforts to steal the 2020 election. President-elect Trump vowed on Monday to impose a 25% tariff on all goods from Mexico and Canada and to add a 10% tariff to all goods from China on the first day of his second presidential term. The move could undo Trump's own 2018 trade deal, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. Economists warn such tariffs could severely hamper trade and industry and result in higher costs for consumers already struggling to make ends meet. In immigration news, Trump's pick for so-called border czar, Tom Homan, threatened to cut off federal funding for sanctuary states that refused to comply with the Trump administration's plan for mass deportations. He spoke on Fox News.
And look, I've seen some of these Democratic governors say they're going to stand in the way. They're going to make it hard for us. Well, a suggestion, if you're not going to help us, get the hell out of the way, but we're going to do it.
A new report on Trump's cabinet picks estimates their combined net worth at a whopping $344.4 billion, more than the gross domestic product of 169 countries. Elon Musk, who Trump named to head up his planned Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, is worth $332 billion. Meanwhile, one of Trump's top advisors, Boris Epstein, was found by Trump's legal team to have solicited bribes from potential political appointees in exchange for promoting them in Trump's orbit. Russia's military says it's captured the village of Kopanki in Ukraine's northeastern Kharkiv region, adding to Russian forces' largest advances in Ukraine since the early days of the 2022 invasion. Overnight, most of Ukraine's territory was under air raid alerts as Russia launched its largest drone attack of the war. In the city of Kharkiv, a Russian missile attack injured 23 people, causing fires and widespread damage to residential buildings. Meanwhile, Ukrainian drones reportedly hit a fuel depot in the Russian region of Kaluga, more than 100 miles from Ukraine's border. This comes as the independent Russian news outlet Mediazona and the BBC Russian service reported the number of Russian soldiers who've died in Ukraine has topped 78,000, though the journalists estimate the true toll could be double that number. A similar analysis found 65,000 Ukrainian combat deaths. In Romania, the far-right nationalist Calin Georgescu, shocked pollsters as he gathered the highest number of votes, around 23%, in the country's presidential election, knocking Prime Minister Marcel Ciolacu out of the race. He'll stand in a runoff vote on December 8th against center-right candidate Elena Lasconi. Georgescu is a far-right critic of NATO who's praised Russia. His popularity soared in recent weeks as he rallied hundreds of thousands of followers on the social media site TikTok. On Monday, Romanian students in Bucharest rallied against Georgescu and the rise of the far right in Romanian politics.
I'm here because I believe in democracy. I believe that people should have a say in what's happening in their country. And I believe that going back to 35 years ago is not a solution to the problems we are facing right now.
In Pakistan, security forces have fired live bullets and tear gas as thousands of supporters of jailed former Prime Minister Imran Khan breached barriers and defied a lockdown to rally in the capital Islamabad, demanding Khan's release. Pakistan's army has been deployed in parts of the city. Four paramilitary rangers and two police officers were killed in clashes. Ahead of the planned rallies, police detained over 4,000 supporters of Imran Khan and his PTI party. Back in the United States, ProPublica has reported on another pregnant woman in Texas who died after she was denied appropriate treatment. Health providers say it's clear 35-year-old Portia Ngumezi needed emergency DNC, or dilation and curettage, after she started bleeding heavily at 11 weeks pregnant, but was instead given the pill misoprostol. While many doctors in states with abortion bans have started avoiding DNC, a common and life-saving procedure, the Houston Methodist Hospital also abides by its own religion-based ethics guidelines that restricted abortion procedures even before Roe v. Wade was overturned. It's the fifth case ProPublica has reported in which pregnant women died after being refused the most effective emergency care following state abortion bans. Three of those cases were in Texas. Portia Ngumezi leaves behind her husband and two young sons. In France, prosecutors are requesting the maximum 20-year jail sentence for Dominique Pellicot, a man who for over a decade drugged his wife, Giselle Pellicot, and invited dozens of men to rape her while she was unconscious. Some of the other defendants in the case, including those accused of raping Ms. Pellicot, could receive sentences from 10 to 17 years. Giselle Pellicot, who chose to reveal her identity to give a voice to other survivors, has emerged as a symbol of courage and women's rights in France. And in related news, a new study finds one in three women in the European Union has experienced gender-based violence in their lifetime. In Spain, thousands of protesters, some donning white masks, marched through Madrid Monday, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
We're here to denounce the male chauvinist violence we suffer, which, of course, are the femicides. We've had more than 80 in the Spanish state throughout the year, regrettably, but also the wage gap. We suffer job precariousness and many other things that we are denouncing today. For example, the military budgets and the militarization of borders or the genocide in Palestine. We have that in mind, too, at this demonstration.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Lebanon, where Israel's killed at least 31 people over the past 24 hours ahead of a possible ceasefire. Israel's security cabinet's expected to vote today on a ceasefire proposal. One Saudi news outlet has reported President Biden and French President Emmanuel Macron will announce a 60-day ceasefire in Lebanon later today. Under the deal, the Israeli military would withdraw from southern Lebanon within 60 days, while Lebanon's army would deploy to border areas from which Hezbollah has launched rocket attacks on Israel. According to Israeli officials, the proposed deal would allow Israel to continue to operate inside Lebanon to remove what it views as threats by Hezbollah. Lebanon's foreign minister, Abdullah Bouhabib, spoke earlier today in Rome.
The country as a whole is paralyzed, and we wanted to finish this and to have a ceasefire. Hopefully, tonight, by tonight, we will have this ceasefire.
Since October last year, Israel's killed over 3,750 people in Lebanon, with most of the deaths occurring over the past 10 weeks. The Israeli attacks have forced more than a million people to flee their homes in Lebanon. About 60,000 people in northern Israel have also been displaced. Israel's also targeted journalists in Lebanon. In a new report, Human Rights Watch has accused Israel of committing an apparent war crime by killing three journalists and injuring four others last month. On October 25th, Israel bombed the Hasbaya Village Resort in southern Lebanon, where more than a dozen journalists had been staying. The attack killed Ghassan Najjar, a journalist and cameraman, Mohammed Reda, a satellite broadcast engineer, both from Al Mayadeen TV, and Wissam Qasem, a cameraman from Al Manar TV. Human Rights Watch has revealed Israel used an airdrop bomb equipped with a U.S.-produced Joint Direct Attack Munition Guidance Kit. To talk more about this new report and the latest in Lebanon, we're joined in Beirut by Ramzi Kais, Lebanon researcher for Human Rights Watch. Ramzi, thank you so much for being with us. Go back to that day of the killing of the three journalists and tell us what you have reconstructed, what you understand took place.
Hi, Amy. I couldn't hear the question very clearly, just parts of it, but I'm currently in Beirut. I came back yesterday evening, and just landing into Beirut, you could see plumes of smoke rising from Beirut's southern suburbs. And just a few minutes ago, before showing up into this studio, there had been strikes on central Beirut, about a kilometer to 2 kilometers away. And just a few minutes ago as well, there had been 20 evacuation warnings that had been given to various buildings in Beirut's southern suburbs, or Dahi. You might know that we're currently ceasefire negotiations are ongoing, the results of which are still not clear. There's a sense of cautious optimism from U.S. officials and Lebanese officials. But as things stand now, and especially in the past few days, there has been dozens of strikes across Beirut, across the south, across the entire country. And so we'll have to wait and see what happens or unfolds. But the situation is very much one of war still. And we're currently looking at, you know, over 3,700 people killed in Lebanon. This includes over 240 children. It includes over 222 health workers, over 700 women, more than 40 hospitals damaged. And what the World Report, what the World Health Organization says, is over 10% of Lebanese hospitals have been either ceased to operate or are partially functioning, and where more than 47% of attacks on health workers have been fatal.
Ramzi, and if you could go back in time and tell us, reconstruct for us the day that the three journalists were killed.
Yeah, so our investigation looked into the attack that took place on October 25, 2024. And what we found, that there was an Israeli strike on the southern Lebanese town of Hasbaya, on a resort where at least more than a dozen journalists had been staying in the early hours of the day. It killed at least three journalists and injured at least four others. We found that this attack was most likely a deliberate attack on civilians and an apparent war crime. We also found that the attack was conducted using an airdrop bomb with a U.S.-produced guidance kit, a Joint Direct Attack Munition, or a JDAM. Human Rights Watch researchers had visited the site of the attack. They had identified the remnants that were used as part of the attack. This included a remnant that was made by the U.S. company Boeing, in addition to another remnant with it that bore a numerical code that identified it as being produced by the U.S. company Woodward. As part of our investigation, we spoke to at least eight people, including three journalists who were injured in the attack, including the owner of the resort where the journalists had stayed. We found that there was no military activity that was happening in the immediate area of the attack. There were no military forces or fighting. The journalists had been staying at the site since at least October 1, so at least 25 days before the strike happened, and they had made routine and repeated trips daily to in the town of Hasbaya to nearby Hilltop, where they were doing live reports. The hotel owner had told Human Rights Watch that the journalists had left and come back approximately the same time every day. Most of the cars that were present at the site were marked by press or TV. All of this together leads us to the conclusion that the Israeli military military knew or should have known that the site, the targeted building that was being struck, was one that contained journalists. Journalists are civilians, and deliberately targeting journalists is a war crime. The Israeli military, initially after the strike, said that they struck a building where terrorists were operating, but a few hours later they said that the incident is under review. And this is not the first time that we have documented the unlawful killing of journalists. We had previously documented an apparently deliberate attack on October 13th that killed Reuters journalist Issam Abdallah. It is also not the first time that we are documenting the use of U.S. weapons unlawfully in Lebanon. We had previously documented the unlawful use of U.S. weapons to kill aid workers, that killed aid workers in earlier this year. And once again, we're seeing them being used unlawfully, and this time journalists were the ones that, that paid the price.
And Ramzi, about those the use of U.S. weapons, what are you calling for specifically of the U.S. government?
Yes, we're calling on the U.S. government to suspend arms sales and military assistance to Israel, given that these weapons are being used unlawfully. We're also calling on U.S. companies to end arms sales, recall already sold weapons wherever possible, and stop all support services for already sold weapons. U.S. weapons were used unlawfully in a deliberate attack on civilians, and for which U.S. officials may be complicit in. And so there's a responsibility the U.S. has under its own laws, but also under international law, to suspend arms sales where there's a real threat, a real risk that these weapons will be used unlawfully.
We've also seen in recent days the International Criminal Court issue arrest warrants for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant over war crimes in Gaza. Does the court have jurisdiction over crimes committed in Lebanon?
The court does not. And in fact, one of the main calls that Human Rights Watch has been making is on the Lebanese government to provide the International Criminal Court with the jurisdiction to investigate crimes within its jurisdiction on Lebanese territory, regardless of who the perpetrator of these violations are. Lebanon is not a signatory to the Rome Statute, but may provide the court with jurisdiction to investigate such crimes within its jurisdiction. We have previously made this call in relation to other investigations that Human Rights Watch has conducted. In April of this year, the government took this decision instructing the foreign ministry to provide the court with jurisdiction under Article 12.3 of the Rome Statute, but the foreign ministry never acted on the decision, and the government eventually reversed that decision, unfortunately. So currently, there needs to be a pathway for accountability in Lebanon. This is where the Lebanese government has a really significant role to play that it has not yet. We're also calling on the Lebanese government to convene or call for the convening of a special session at the UN Human Rights Council in order to establish an international fact-finding mechanism that can investigate, document, collect evidence, and report on its findings in relation to violations of the laws of war in connection to the hostilities in Lebanon and northern Israel.
Ramzi Kayas, if you can talk about this possibility of a ceasefire and what exactly it would mean. You yourself live in Beirut, and how people would be affected. Does it mean there will be a mass flow of people back to their homes? What does all of this present, and how hopeful are the people of Lebanon right now?
Yeah, as I mentioned, there is some cautious optimism by U.S. officials, by Lebanese officials, about the possibility of a ceasefire. But as we speak, strikes are currently ongoing in Lebanon. They are ongoing in the southern suburbs of Beirut, but as well in central Beirut, where about a few minutes ago there had been a strike between 1 to 2 kilometers away. There had been ongoing repeated evacuation warnings for building in the southern suburbs of Beirut, and strikes are continued to be reported in South Lebanon and across the country. Whether a ceasefire or not takes place, the fact remains that in Lebanon, more than 3,700 people have been killed, more than 240 children, more than 220 health and rescue workers, more than 700 women. Entire border villages have been detonated, have been destroyed and reduced to rubble. And there has been significant damages to the country's health sector, with the large number of medical workers killed, the hospitals that have been damaged. It's not clear that many people in the south can return to their homes, given the vast damage that has happened, particularly in the border villages, where we have seen controlled demolitions, in some cases of entire villages, in some cases of large areas of those villages. We were speaking today with the mayor of one of the border villages, and he was expressing to us the anxiety that is had with returning to those villages because of what is not known. What is not known in terms of what is left of the villages, whether they're going to be able to recognize it, but also in terms of what weapon remnants remains. These are villages that have also been struck by white phosphorus. They've been struck by high explosive weapons. And so we have yet to see what will unfold with the ongoing ceasefire negotiations. But as things stand, and given the high toll of people killed, of civilian killed, there also needs to be accountability for violations of the laws of war that have taken place, that we have documented and that others have documented. This includes deliberate targeting of civilians, indiscriminate attacks on civilians, widespread use of white phosphorus, the unlawful attacks on civilian institutions, the use of booby trap devices. We'll have to wait and see what comes about with regards to the ceasefire negotiations. But as things stand, strikes are ongoing on the country.
And Ramzi, what do you make of this decision of the Israeli government, even as they are entertaining the possibility of a ceasefire, ramping up these attacks in the past few days? What's your sense of what their goal is here?
Yeah, it's not clear, right? I mean, there has been a serious escalation in the scale of attacks, particularly with regards to strikes on the southern suburbs. We've seen dozens of strikes on the southern suburbs. There's also been, you know, especially today with the evacuation warnings being issued to various buildings in the country, and in some cases, strikes happening without evacuation warnings. To me, it's not clear what all this message is. Hezbollah has also increased the number of rockets it has fired into Israel, with yesterday firing over 300 rockets into various areas of north and central Israel. It's not clear what this all means and whether the ceasefire will in fact take place. We'll have to wait and see. But you know, regardless, civilians are you know, unfortunately paying the price as more homes are being destroyed, or more buildings are being leveled, as more strikes are ongoing across the country.
Ramzi Kayas, we want to thank you for being with us, Lebanon researcher for Human Rights Watch, speaking to us from Beirut. The latest report from Beirut, headline: U.S. arms used in Israeli strike on journalists, 3 killed, 4 injured in an apparent war crime. We'll link to it. When we come back, we'll speak to the head of Amnesty International USA. He wrote a letter urging President Biden to take bolder action before he leaves office, including granting clemency to Native American leader Leonard Peltier. He's been behind bars for half a century. Stay with us. February 8th by Pillow Queens. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. President Biden's facing calls to grant clemency to the jailed Native American leader Leonard Peltier. He spent nearly half a century in prison for a crime he says he did not commit. Leonard Peltier recently turned 80 years old. He's always maintained his innocence over the 1975 killing of 2 FBI agents in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. His supporters say his conviction was riddled with irregularities and prosecutorial misconduct. In a moment, we'll speak to the head of Amnesty International USA. But first, I want to turn to a video Amnesty produced about Peltier's case that's narrated by the actor Peter Coyote.
I am everyone who ever died without a voice or a prayer or a hope or a chance.
Leonard Peltier is a Native American activist who has been in prison for more than 46 years, serving two consecutive life terms for a crime he maintains he did not commit. In 1977, he was convicted of killing two FBI agents, Ronald Williams and Jack Kohler, during a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Peltier was a member of the American Indian Movement, AIM, founded in 1968 during the Civil Rights Movement to advocate for the rights of Native Americans. The murders occurred at a time when AIM supporters and residents of Pine Ridge were being intimidated and killed, allegedly by paramilitaries connected to the government. A climate of fear and terror prevailed. After two AIM members were acquitted of the killings, the FBI coerced witnesses into saying they saw Peltier shoot the agents. Ballistics evidence that could have aided